Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and now it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. The Boston Celtics are currently the favorite at plus 160, but the team that's third in my championship rankings, the Dallas Mavericks, you can get them on DraftKings right now at plus 1600 to win the title. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible week. We're going to keep it real simple today. We're just going to do a film session. I've got roughly like 50 clips or so from three different games we're going to hit. We're going to hit Lakers Nuggets, Mavs Clippers, and Suns Wolves in the film session today. And then I also have a mailbag at the end of the show where we're going to go over, I think I got like five or six mailbag questions we're going to hit. You guys know the drill before we get started. Subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel so you don't miss any more of our videos. Follow me on Twitter at @_JasonLT so you guys don't miss any show announcements. Don't forget about our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts under Hoops Tonight. And then keep dropping mailbag questions in those YouTube comments so we can keep hitting them throughout the rest of the season. Also, last but not least, before we get started, I want to talk to you guys for a minute about Game Time. This is the best time of year to get out and see a basketball game live. There's just nothing like NBA playoff basketball. And we've got so many guys that are kind of on the tail end of their careers that are out there playing, guys like LeBron James, guys like Kevin Durant. Make sure you guys get out there and see these guys in person while you can. Game Time provides an incredible experience. They have all-in pricing. So you don't have to worry about going to check out and suddenly getting surprised by the amount of money that you're going to have to spend. You don't have to worry about a convoluted process. You can check out in as few as two taps. And they have a really cool feature where you can actually see an example of where your seat is and the view from your seat within the app. So you don't show up to a surprise in terms of what you're getting for your money. They also have exclusive flash deals and sponsored deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. And with zone deals, you pick the section and Game Time picks the seats for you. for big time savings. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code HOOPS for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code HOOPS. That's HOOPS for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. All right, let's get right into the film. So we are going to be starting with the complete collapse of the Lakers at the end of this Denver Nuggets game, but specifically the work that Denver was doing offensively. They scored on 8 of their last 9 possessions in this game. This has been a consistent issue for the Lakers this season. In 2 crunch time games in the regular season, they gave up an offensive rating over 190. And then the offensive rating they allowed for the Nuggets in crunch time of game 2 of this Western Conference first round series, 200. Yes, that's not a mistake. 200 points per 100 possessions is the rate at which the Nuggets were scoring. As I said, they scored on 8 of their last 9 possessions. So let's get, without any further ado, over to the film. So first of all, we're going to start with LeBron James driving on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Really bad floor balance from the Lakers here. You're going to see LeBron, AD, and Rui all end up underneath the basket and Gabe Vincent in the corner. That puts Austin Reeves in a huge predicament in transition defense. So when LeBron misses this shot at the rim, by the way, KCP played really, really good defense against LeBron down the stretch. LeBron was still magnificent, made a bunch of plays, but he had, trust me, he missed some of them too. It could have been worse. And honestly, when you look at it and break it down simply to Jamal Murray hitting that shot, you needed every last one of those KCP stops in order to get out of here with a win. So miss, now look at the floor balance. Gabe Vincent's trailing the play. We already have a 3-on-1 before we've done anything. We have MPJ, Aaron Gordon, and Jamal Murray with only Austin Reeves back. But in addition to that, you're going to see Jokic beat AD down the floor too. Everyone's just outrunning the Lakers. We're going to get a kick ahead opportunity here. And Michael Porter Jr. kind of pump fakes on the 3-point shot and finds Aaron Gordon underneath the basket. He draws a foul, gets the line. He makes both free throws. So that's our first bucket. Next time down, we're going to get Jokic attacking Anthony Davis in the post. Interesting thing to me about here is fatigue setting in for AD. AD was not good defensively at the end of this game, and you could tell that he just was out of gas. And Jokic took full advantage, powers through AD here and misses the shot. But from this specific spot, I want you guys to pay attention to how quickly Jokic gets off the ground when he's out of balance versus AD, who just takes a split second to relax. See, AD just relaxed for a split second. That allowed Jokic to get back up there, tap at the ball, and create an offensive rebound for himself. Here we go again. We're going to get yet another Jokic post-up of Anthony Davis out of a ball screen. Kick back to Jokic at the top of the key, and he's just going to rip right through AD for a left shoulder hook. And AD did a really nice job on Jokic for about 3 quarters. Well, really up until he picked up his 4th foul. And then Jokic just ripped right through him down the stretch of this game. Easy little hook shot over the top. This was another mistake from AD that I thought I would attribute to laziness, or I shouldn't say laziness, but fatigue. So we get the 2-man game with Jokic and Murray here. And as Jokic comes down, Murray's kind of peeking back. You can kind of see it as he comes off. Watch Murray peek back right there. See how he's peeking back to kind of identify where Jokic is? Jokic is going to linger here at the top of the key. Now, Anthony Davis, his primary responsibility here is to contain Jamal Murray on the drive because Austin Reeves is in a trail position. But instead, a little subtle fake, Jamal kind of flattens out his drive and fakes like he's not going to make that driving move. He's reading AD, and AD is going to make a critical mistake here. AD is going to close out on Jokic instead of containing this drive. And that little hesitation from AD, Jamal Murray then quickly turns the corner and gets to the rim. Even LeBron was caught off guard because he thought AD was going to be there to contain the drive. And again, if you're AD, especially considering Jokic probably will take that three, but he's, especially with 10 seconds on the shot clock, it's far more likely that he's going to give attack a closeout there. So if I'm AD, I've got to focus on containing Jamal Murray first. And when Jamal throws the pass back, close out and play the results from there. No matter what, even if Jokic is going to knock this down, you know, a good percentage of the time, it is still a lower value shot than Jamal Murray scoring easily at the rim. Now we're going to get Rui Hachimura misses a wide open three here. Again, that was a big difference in this game. I was talking about it in the post game after game two, but the Nuggets non-Jokic Murray players and the LeBron and the Lakers non-LeBron AD players, there's been a mismatch there. LeBron and AD have basically, I actually think they've outplayed Jamal and Nikola just a tiny bit. Not in the sense of obviously the scoreboard, and Jamal Murray made a bunch of big plays down the stretch of that game, but Jamal's been inefficient. Jamal has struggled for the majority of this series, except for the tail end of the fourth quarter of game two, right? Like LeBron and AD have gone punch for punch with Jokic and Murray for the most part. I'm gonna call it even because of the clutch shot making of Jamal Murray, but I think we can all agree LeBron and AD have gone punch for punch with Jokic and Murray. But the non-Jokic Murray role players have outscored the non-LeBron AD Lakers by like 30 points or something like that in this series. They have completely dominated them. At the end of this game, we had a wide open three for Rui Hachimura. He missed. Austin Reeves ends up missing a pretty good look on a pull-up three over here. Michael Porter Jr. knocks down the crazy chaotic three on the other end of the floor. Big difference down the stretch of this particular game. But we're going to get out in transition on this one. Jokic is going to look to attack Anthony Davis again. And once again, he's just going to power right through him. AD, these were bumps that he was doing a much better job of holding his ground in the first half. Now he's getting out of position. He's gambling. You could just tell fatigue has completely taken over for Anthony Davis at the end of this game. Jokic gets an and one on him. This is where we finally get the stop from the Lakers. And it comes out of the two-man game as LeBron is on Jokic. As Jokic screens Austin gets hit. And so LeBron has to switch. And LeBron does a good job of reading the shot clock and understanding that I'm pointing to the ground as if he's reading the floor. That's a broadcast trick. But he's checking down the floor and he sees on the other end the shot clock. So he knows Jamal has to shoot. So he jumps it. And when he jumps it, Jamal ends up defaulting to a pass at the last second, and LeBron's able to hit it away and get out the other end for a dunk. Again, lost, really, really lost in all of this. LeBron was pretty damn good down the stretch of this game. All right, so then we get the chaos, right? So Jokic sees Aaron Gordon with just Austin Reeves on him underneath the basket. A lot of people were calling this a shot. I don't think it was a shot. I think this was literally Jokic identifying that Gordon had the size advantage and basically just getting it up in the air as high as possible so that Aaron Gordon can basically high point it. And he does, and he beats Austin Reeves the ball. By the way, that's a battle that if Austin Reeves wins that battle, the Lakers probably win the game. That's how subtle a little thing like this makes a huge difference in a game like this. Aaron Gordon wins that battle. Rui gets caught out of position here. Michael Porter Jr. Breaks free on the right wing. Really nice pass from Aaron Gordon. D'Lo comes in and gets a final contest, but it's not enough. Huge shot from Michael Porter Jr. to tie the game. So the Lakers are going to get a couple of buckets here down the stretch, running an action called stack pick and roll that we've talked about a lot on this show. It's where you look to back screen the screen defender. So the first time they run it, it's going to be D'Lo on the ball and LeBron as the back screener. So again, you can see AD sets the screen. LeBron's job here is he's trying to back screen Aaron Gordon. Doesn't even really get much of a screen on him, but that's actually the design of the play. Either way, because Aaron Gordon has his back turned and he's keyed in on AD, D'Lo is able to get downhill and make a nice scoop shot off the glass to give the Lakers the lead back. This is the play I thought Darvin Ham should have challenged, and I thought it was a huge missed opportunity. So we're going to get, at this point, the Lakers make a switch. They put LeBron James on Jamal Murray, and they put Anthony Davis on Jokic. They're going to switch the two-man game, right? So as Jokic comes off, they were going to switch, but Jamal ends up rejecting the screen. As he's coming downhill, there's a little bump right there, just a little bump, okay? And Jamal ends up taking and missing a fadeaway, right? So here's the thing. We can argue about whether or not that was a foul. Personally, I think in this type of game, with everything that was going on, it wasn't. But as I always say, don't blame the officials. And by the way, and I said this on Twitter, and I firmly believe it, the Lakers going after this game and blaming the officials, I thought it was lame as hell. I thought I will never, ever support a team that blames officiating after a loss. I think it's literally a loser mentality. don't like it, right? But in this situation, LeBron's mad. This is a call. And again, we watch it in full motion. This is a kind of contact that happened almost every single possession in this game. So here's the problem I have. What do you see here? The Lakers have two timeouts. There is 57.6 seconds left in this game. What is Darvin Ham saving the challenge for? What is he saving the challenge for? That is going to get overturned, in my opinion. If he calls the challenge, it's going to be overturned. They're just going to give possession back to the Nuggets, and you're going to have another opportunity to try to get a stop. I honestly was really disappointed in Darvin in that sense, because the players are out there scratching and clawing and doing everything they can to try to win the game, and you are not doing your job as the coach to take advantage of the resources at your disposal. Wasting that challenge, taking it home with you, that is wasting a resource that was at your disposal. And so again, I don't blame the officials. Officials are going to make mistakes. I don't blame LeBron. He's just trying to play defense. The guy I blame there is Darvin Ham. His job is to throw the challenge flag there. Or I said to throw the challenge flag. To challenge that play, turn on the red light, whatever the hell you call it, and try to get that one overturned. Again, we literally saw earlier in the game the Nuggets get two calls overturned, including one where D'Angelo Russell got raked across the face. Like, it was going to get overturned if they challenged it. They needed to challenge that. It was just a missed opportunity from Darvin Ham. We go down the other end. The Lakers are going to run stack, pick, and roll again. This time, it's going to be D'Lo setting the back screen. So you're going to see, again, AD setting the screen. Aaron Gordon is our screen defender. Watch D'Lo back screen Aaron Gordon. Gets a good screen on him. Now LeBron has the angle on KCP, and Jamal Murray is the helper. There's just nothing he can do there. That's an easy layup. LeBron, again, complaining. This is the one that LeBron was pissed off at about. Thinks he got hit there. And again, probably a foul, but that kind of contact was happening on almost every single possession. So I don't really sympathize with the Lakers complaining about officiating. If anything, they should have been complaining at their head coach for missing that last challenge opportunity. So then we go down the other end. LeBron has the layup, right? So the Lakers are back up by two. And we're going to go back to a two-man game with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. First, they switch it, and Jamal goes, okay, don't really like this matchup. So we call another screen. We get LeBron into the action, and LeBron just briefly takes a negative step here where he gets a little bit unsquared, and Jamal Murray is able to get enough separation to knock down a shot. Big-time shot from Jamal. And again, that's why you keep shooting. Even when you've struggled throughout the game, you keep shooting because you're going to need to knock some down at some point, and he hits the big ones, right? KCP flops here and in the process gives up an open three. There were a lot of Laker fans. And again, yeah, this is, if you watch it in slow motion, this was a good no call. There's no reason to call. Like, if you watch, like, there's contact here. There's like a very, very slight shove, but that's not the kind of thing that's going to get called in that moment. Lakers fans were pissed about the shot. I really disagree. If you look at the paint, Jokic is there. LeBron this season is having the best jump shooting season of his career. He's already made two threes in the corner, in the quarter. He already made a right shoulder fade over here. This is a great look for a great shooter. And literally watch, front rim, back rim, front rim. It's as close as you can come to making it. So, like, I don't have any problem with that shot from LeBron James. Now we're going to head out the other way. And I really liked how Jamal kept AD on his heels here. And there's a specific part of this play that I think got him open. So we get the little hedge from D'Lo to try to flatten out the drive. Now Jamal gets a running start kind of coming downhill. And there's an aggressive dribble attack move here that gets AD to take a negative step back into the lane. Right there. See, boom. Now he's got his body turned. His shoulders are squared towards the rim. That buys Jamal the separation to get back. I want you guys to watch this in slow motion. Watch that aggressive dribble drive move from Murray that actually creates the opportunity here. So watch. Right here, he's going to make a hard dribble drive move. Bam. Downhill. Look at his shoulder is literally down low below AD, making it look like he's going to drive. That gets AD to take his first big aggressive step back towards the rim. Then he steps back, which creates the separation that AD can't make up, and game over. Nuggets are up 2-0 in the series. So, like, again, we talked about a lot of specific things. For instance, we talked about the missed challenge call. We talked about Rui Hachimura missing an open three. We talked about Austin Reeves missing his three. We talked about AD struggling to get that one offensive rebound. The reason why that all of that is just related to this specific game. The Lakers played well enough to win this specific game, right? Like that goes without saying. They were up 20 in the second half. That's not a hot take to say the Lakers could have won this game. They literally were up 20 in the second half, right? But the bigger issue is when it comes to these situations, when it comes to these late game, slow down half court situations, you're not close to slowing down Denver's offense. It's not you're holding them to a bucket on half of their possessions. They are scoring every single time down the floor. You gave up a bucket on 8 of your last 9 defensive possessions. In the regular season, you did the same thing. That's why I don't think the Lakers have any real chance to win this series anymore. It's just clear to me that they don't have the personnel to contend, especially with Jamal Murray at the point of attack. And it was an issue for them all season last year and in through the postseason. They never addressed it. This team is too good for them, especially in those slowdown half-court environments. If they had actually done a better job getting stops over the course of the season, you might be able to talk me into them having more of a puncher's chance. But like, yeah, and like I gave them just that tiny little crack of a chance to start the series, but now I think that's slammed shut. I did say at that point that I thought they needed to split in Denver, and they did not do so. I specifically targeted game one as well. They did not do so. And the bottom line is like there's no point of optimism that I can point to. They are literally incapable of getting stops against this team. And so by virtue of that, they're just not going to be able to beat them, certainly not 4 times in the next 5 games. All right, we're going to move on to Luka's run against the Los Angeles Clippers. Let me pull the clips up here. All right, we're going to start with a wedge screen so that Luka can attack out of the post. So a wedge screen is typically a screen where you start on one side of the floor and you get a screen from one of your teammates to then cut over to the block. And the purpose it typically serves is either to get a switch, but more frequently a wedge screen is used for post position. So if Luka comes down this side of the floor and he tries to back his way down, he's going to have to fight and fight and fight and fight for position to try to get down to a position closer to the block, right? A wedge screen, by virtue of Luka coming off, if they don't switch, then that guy's going to be in trail position. If he's in trail position, then Luka can get easier post position here on the block. That's why they use wedge screens. The Nuggets use them a lot. A lot of teams around the league use these wedge screens to get their post players into better position. But the Clippers are going to switch it. So here's the wedge screen.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Washington back screens on Kawhi. James Harden is there. They just switch it, okay? So now Luka is going to attack James Harden out of the post. Now we're going to get a double team from Russell Westbrook. On the double team, we're going to get a windshield wiper rotation from Kawhi. Kawhi is going to take Kyrie. So now we have a 3-on-2 here on the backside, right? This is going to generate a closeout opportunity for PJ Washington. It's just way easier to score when you have a defender closing out at you. He pass fakes, jab steps, is able to get an angle. Nice patience to wait for Kawhi to come down before he goes up and finishes. But once again, the action that generates the mismatch, that generates the double team, that generates the advantage situation. Now, this very next possession here, you're going to see one of the reasons why this lineup works. And again, this is my favorite Mavericks lineup. It's Kyrie and Luka, Maxi Kleba, PJ Washington, and Derek Jones Jr. In order for this to work, it requires Maxi to be able to hold up against Zubac in terms of size. Here, they're going to actually run through Zubac in the post. Zubats, I should say. I'm trying to learn how to pronounce these guys better. Kleba is going to actually fight Zubats into a really tough left shoulder hook and actually forces him to leave it short. Again, notice he's attacking the base. He's trying to slide up underneath him and disrupt his base, forces him to come sweeping across the lane and forces a miss. So again, they get an offensive rebound out of that, but I just wanted to show that play because I thought it was a strong indicator of the specific matchup problem that Zubats presents and how important it is for Kleba to be able to hold up in that matchup. Now we're going to get the exact same wedge screen, right? So here we are, Luka, Kawhi, PJ Washington sets the wedge screen. We get the switch. We're going back to the block. This time they don't double because last time they doubled, they got in rotation and gave up a bucket. And Luka, you just can't leave him on an island with James Harden. He ends up drawing a foul, gets hit on the forearm as he's going up. Now he's going to the foul line. On the other end of the floor, one of the big stories of this game, like we talked about last night, was Luka holding up against the Clipper stars on an island. Here we're going to get a basic just brush screen from James Harden to get Kawhi switched onto Luka. Look at Luka sliding his feet and cutting off the driving lanes. He actually pokes the ball away in the chaos. The Mavericks end up getting a steal. Now we're going to go down the other way off the turnover. And this is just really simple, easy basketball. Paul George has Luka in a cross match. We're going to get a screen from Derek Jones Jr. That's going to lead to a switch with Powell. Now, Clippers don't like this matchup, so they're going to come with a double team. Here comes Kawhi. Double team. Kleba's there. We're going to get a closeout from Paul George. Extra pass, PJ Washington, wide open corner three, knocks it down. Again, the Mavs desperately needed somebody to hit some shots down the stretch. PJ Washington and Maxi Kleba both came up huge in this game. All right, so on this particular play, this is a transition situation where Luka uses a head of steam to get Kawhi on his heels, okay? So missed shot, Luka's coming up the floor. Now, Luka smells blood in the water at this point, right? Mavs are on a run. I think they were down 73-67, right? So they just tied the game. They're on a 6-0 run. Game's tied at 73. Luka wants to completely shift the psychology of this game, and the easiest way to do that is to get a quick bucket, preferably a three, something that just sucks the life out of the arena and makes the other team feel like they're on the ropes, right? So Luka sees blood in the water. He's coming up the floor here. No one's matched up with him, so he starts to pick up his pace. Now Kawhi's there, but because Luka's taking these super aggressive downhill steps, watch Kawhi. I'm going to move it into slow motion here. Watch Kawhi take a backward step. Boom, right there. That's all that Luka needed to get the separation for his step back against one of the best perimeter defenders in the world. You could just tell on the release of that one that it was perfect coming out of his hand. Now he's talking shit. Now Luka has completely fundamentally changed the psychology of this basketball game. All right, let's get another wedge screen in here. So we're going to get the pass to Kyrie. Here comes the wedge screen. This time from Kleba, gets the switch. Comes through to the other side of the floor. And again, that one didn't look as much like a wedge screen as the others. Because the Mavs know the switch is coming, it's more just targeting a matchup. But the fundamental action on the first two times they ran it is a wedge screen. Now, Luka's attacking Harden in the post. Russell Westbrook doubles one pass away off of a really, really good player. And Kyrie Irving knocks down the huge three off of the kickout pass. Again, if you're going to double one pass away, you got to have a windshield wiper rotation. What that means is, go back here for a second. So what that means is as Russ prepares to double, especially with Kleba and PJ Washington, these are lesser shooters on this side. Kawhi has to be immediately up and ready to rotate to Kyrie. If you're going to double one pass away, Kawhi has to windshield wiper with him, meaning both of them have to make the rotation at the exact same time. All right, this is Luka getting another stop against Kawhi on an island. So kick pass there. We're going to get another Harden screen to get a switch. Now watch Luka contain the Kawhi drive. Watch him just sliding his feet, beating him to spots, and cutting off driving angles. See, cut off the drive, spin back baseline, beat him to the spot, wall up, don't foul. Now at this point, Kawhi's screwed. There's not enough time in the clock to do anything. He's going to have to rise up for an incredibly difficult shot. Luka gets a great contest. Really, really good individual defense from Luka. Now, the Clippers make an adjustment. My guess here is they didn't want to give up any more switches, so they put Russ on Luka. Russ is always really good at defending bigger post players. You might remember last year in the postseason, Russ doing a bunch of damage as a post defender against the Suns, if you guys remember. But it also, Russ is just so strong and low center of gravity, he's really difficult to screen. So my guess is they were just trying to avoid any sort of switch here. So instead of trying to get a switch, Luka just takes Russ to the post, and Russ kind of denies. He fronts the post, right? So now there's only 8 seconds on the shot clock, so this possession is kind of dead. But Kyrie Irving is capable of making a play off the dribble to rescue possession. 4 seconds left. Drives down on Paul George, kind of fakes like he's going to spin back, and then goes back over his left shoulder with that nasty little floating hook. Now, Luka talked after the game. I thought this was really fascinating. Luka talked after the game about how he did not want that he went to Jason Kidd and told him he didn't want to double team because he trusts his defense. Here's a great example. Paul George gets Luka on a switch. Paul George tries to drive past Luka. Luka beats him to the spot and cuts him off. But the Mavs end up coming with a double team, which opens up this little opportunity to James Harden, who ends up swinging to Russ, who hits a three. Now, again, in terms of game plan, you live with that because you want Russ taking threes. But to Luka's credit and what he was saying after the game, he felt comfortable in that matchup on an island. Now, if you guys remember last night, I talked about over-aggression being an issue for the Clippers down the stretch. These next two buckets for the Mavs came out of pointless over-aggression. So here we go. We have Luka trying to post up Russ again, and Luka creates a little passing angle. And then again, if you're Russ, instead of going after this, just play solid defense. But he gambles, gets out of position. Luka gets downhill. Now all four other helping Clippers are lined up on him, and he's able to generate another wide open corner three for PJ Washington, who knocks it down. Now we're going to get Luka getting attacked on an island again by Paul George. Not going to slow this down or stop it. Just watch him. Cuts off the drive, forces a tough contested jumper. Literally, like, again, I talked a lot after game one. Like, the hedge and recover was the schematic thing you can do, or he just needs to do a better job. And this is just him doing a better job on defense on an island. Look at him turning to his bench and hyping them up after he's getting these stops. Now, Paul George's turn to be over-aggressive. And again, I wish, so it's going to start with a double team of Kyrie Irving. But if you're the Clippers from a game plan perspective, you got to be less aggressive and actually force Luka to score here. But instead, he reaches. And when he reaches, he does get a hand on the ball. But Luka's able to regain control. Now, Paul George is out of position. Once again, downhill, everyone keyed in on him. Wide open catch and shoot three for Maxi Kleba. Knocks it down. Huge shot making from PJ and Maxi late. Another huge defensive play from Maxi Kleba on Zubac here. So PG drives. Maxi steps up and help. He's not over-committing, but he's putting himself between Zubac and PG, right? Gets a drop-off pass. Now watch in slow motion. This one I am going to slow down. Watch the strip from Maxi here. Watch this. So he's in position. Watch the strip. Right as Zubac's going up. Boom, knocks it loose. Huge defensive play from Maxi here down the stretch. And then lastly, we get our dagger. So Luka's got James Harden. We're just going to work it down. Clearing out, creating space. This was the shot that we all saw coming last night, right? This is one of Luka's favorite things to do, especially on the road in the postseason. He wants to snatch your soul with the shot. He wants to hit the dagger. He wants to talk a bunch of shit. He wants to let your crowd know about it. Here we go. I missed playoff Luka. All right, we're going to move on to Suns Wolves. I got to go to a different playlist here, so give me a second.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. So first possession here was one of the early possessions of the game. And I thought it was just a strong example of the Suns doing a lot of over penetrating and in the process struggling with the physicality on those drives. So again, if I'm Devin Booker here, this is where I just want to throw a kickback pass to Grayson Allen and take a three. You are now trying to get downhill and score against the best athlete at your position in the league. This is not an advantage. And especially with the amount of physicality that's being allowed, that's a battle he's going to lose. Ant gets physical with him and Devin Booker turns it over. Big story in this game was the Suns struggling to handle physical ball pressure. Talked about Ant needing to beat coverages with the hedge in particular and the high drop in particular with passing and also dig downs into driving lanes. In this case, the coverage is the drop, right? But Grayson is hard digging into his driving lane. Easy read to Mike Conley over here. Ant takes it, buys a closeout opportunity. He's able to drive it and score. Ant was just magnificent in this game, passing, in my opinion. Here's an example of a really bad misread from the Suns and them making life more difficult than it needed to be. So they run some early offense and they don't get anything out of it. So it gets kicked back to Grayson Allen, and then him and KD end up running action, right? So here's where we're set up here. This is the play I talked about on the show last night, those of you guys who remember. So Conley's guarding Grayson, Kat's guarding KD, right? And we know that the coverage here is going to be hedge and recover, right? So as Grayson comes into this ghost screen, Conley is going to hedge, which is going to open up an opportunity for Grayson to attack a closeout here, right? Here comes screen, hedge, Grayson breaks free, KD throws the pass. There is a baked-in driving lane here with 7 seconds on the shot clock for Grayson to rip left, just catch and rip and drive. If he catches and rips, in all likelihood, Gobert is going to step up and Ant is going to drop to try to box out Nurkic, and Bradley Beal is going to get a wide open corner three because he is a very good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. So all Grayson has to do, rip left, draw Gobert, Ant will sink, Beal's going to be open, wide open catch and shoot three. What does Grayson do instead? Just throw it back to KD. Now we're attacking a set defense. And guess what? KD is going to drive and take and miss a really tough contested two. So instead of getting a wide open catch and shoot three for Bradley Beal, we're getting a tough contested pull-up two for KD. That's just bad process. More importantly, why'd you run the screen? Why'd you run the ghost screen if you don't have any intention of attacking the advantage with it? And like, I feel bad for Grayson because he re-sprained that ankle last night, but a lot of these missed reads and opportunities early were on Grayson Allen. All right, our next one. This was a really nice peel-off switch from Anthony Edwards in a transition play, okay? So I'm going to put this one in slow motion because I think it's interesting. So Bradley Beal is driving, right? Nurkic is trailing the play. Edwards and Gobert are both on them, right? But watch as this gets behind the rim. Ant makes a call. He identifies right here. He's like, oh, Rudy's got this under control. Brad's behind the backboard. If he tries to rise up, Rudy's going to clean this up. So Ant goes, I'm no longer needed here. I'm going to recover to the pass. And so he backs off and runs into this passing lane right as Bradley Beal throws it and gets a steal. Huge defensive play, obviously early in the game, but really, really nice defensive play from Anthony Edwards. And just an example of the type of smart defensive instincts that make this Minnesota defense so good. And it generates a run out opportunity and Jaden gets to the line. All right. Our next one is another missed read from Grayson Allen. Okay. So Grayson catches on the wing. Beal cuts through. We're going to get the ball screen with KD, right? Grayson comes off. Cat's in a drop. Look at this. Throw the damn basketball to the wide open guy on the wing so he can attack a closeout, right? Nope, we're going to swing it across the floor and run action on the other end, which is going to end in Bradley Beal taking a contested pull-up too. That's it's literally the story of this matchup so far. The Suns passing on easy drive and kick opportunities to play it, to play on an island against elite perimeter defensive players. This was a silly foul from Karl Towns, and I just thought it was funny because Kat was complaining at the refs all night, but this is going to get called every single time. Watch as he gets ready to set the screen. Watch that last step, and then he just trips him. Just sticks his leg out and trips him, and then he'll get mad at the ref for getting called for an offensive foul. Now, another Grayson Allen read here in transition. He's going to over-penetrate and drive into a physical situation and turn it over. Again, as he's driving, right here, as he's driving, boom, Karl Towns turned his back. Throw the ball to Devin Booker. He's going to be able to drive that closeout or hit a catch-and-shoot three. Instead, we over-penetrate into traffic and turn the basketball over. We're going to get a double staggered action here from Bradley Beal. This was another play I talked about on the show last night, right? So Bradley Beal is going to come off the screen. Jaden's chasing. Both bigs are dropping. Freeze right there. I'm actually going to go back a little bit. Right. Throw the pass. It's open. These guys are dropping. Jaden's trailing. Royce O'Neal is wide open at the top of the key. There's no problem with the angle for the pass. If you throw that, here's one of two things is going to happen. Either Nikhil Alexander-Walker is going to close out, or Naz Reid is going to close out and Royce O'Neal can drive the closeout, which will keep the defense in rotation and help you generate an easier opportunity, or he's going to get a catch and shoot three, which is going to be a higher percentage shot than this. But instead, Beal over-penetrates. Gobert, a lot of late clock switches from Rudy Gobert last night that were huge in this game, but he switches out, and now Bradley Beal is going to take this incredibly difficult step through floater thing against Rudy Gobert. That's an extremely... So tell me, what's a higher percentage shot? This or what you might have gotten if you threw the kickback pass to Royce O'Neal? That's not a difficult question to find the answer to. All right. Now we're going to see Kevin Durant turning the ball over against physical ball pressure. This happened a couple of times with Naz Reid in particular. So the Suns are running out the other way. They're going to throw the ball to KD. And Naz Reid just picks him up with aggressive ball pressure, physical stunting at the basketball, and forces a turnover. And again, that was a huge story in this game, just and in general in this matchup. You apply physical ball pressure on the Suns, they're going to turn it over and get sloppy. Devin Booker, same sort of thing here. Fatigue is starting to set in. There's ball pressure. He's trying to make a high post entry to KD, but he doesn't make a pass fake. And so Nikhil Alexander-Walker is able to get an easy deflection and force a turnover. Now, this was the stretch that I talked about in the show last night where Anthony Edwards was beating the hedge or beating the hedge and recover. So we're going to go to Anthony Edwards here on the wing. Naz Reid screens. There's... So Eubanks' coverage is supposed to be a hedge, but he's just too slow there, so it kind of looks more like a high drop. But it's more or less the same concept. Now, again, instead of doing anything stupid, take the read that is there, the easy kickback to Naz Reid. Devin Booker's closing out. He has to leave his feet to contest the shot. That allows Nas to drive, and he's able to get to the foul line. Again, take the easy reads that are available. Now, this is going to be a bucket for Devin Booker, and an example of how much easier it is to score when you're playing with an advantage. So we're going to get a ball screen, and this is a kind of like a Spain pick and roll type of thing where Booker is relocating to the top as Eubanks is rolling. We get a closeout opportunity. Now, look, this is what it looks like, and nice little kind of brush screen here from Eubanks too. Devin Booker attacking with an advantage. He's able to pump. On the pump, he gets Nikhil Alexander-Walker to close out hard to his right-hand side. Then he's able to drive left. That gives an angle for Eubanks to set another screen. Ant does not dig down. And so Devin Booker can rise cleanly into a pull-up two-pointer. Again, those guys are just going to be so much more efficient when they're attacking with an advantage versus when they're attacking in a set defense situation. Ant's going to beat the hedge with the pass here again. Again, Eubanks is a little slow, but he's up, right? And Devin Booker, like they're doing on so many of these ball screens, is digging down super hard into the driving lane and throws the kick. It's almost a little sloppy pass, and so Nikhil Alexander-Walker ends up having to hit a little tougher shot than you're expecting, but that opening is created by Ant making the read against the hedge. And then we're going to see it again here. So Gobert. High drop. Gobert's rolling. Gordon sinks into the lane. As a result, Nikhil Alexander-Walker's open. And he identifies Jaden McDaniels on the weak side. Again, look at KD. KD is sinking into the lane. KD's got his foot on the left block. So now KD is closing out on Jaden McDaniels. And all night long, Jaden was magnificent with these just basic rip-through moves on KD, just beating him with his athleticism, rip. And this is just... That's just a really, really nice little drifting fadeaway along the baseline. So shout out to Anthony Edwards. He was just really good as a playmaker in this particular game. More physical ball pressure from Naz Reid forces yet another turnover. Now that one should have been that one actually went off of Naz Reid's foot, but they didn't review it. But still, a turnover for all intents and purposes for the game that was caused by ball pressure. All right. Last four clips of this game, Mike Conley takes over in the fourth quarter. Now, not shown here. I didn't show it because just for time's sake. But in the second quarter, Mike Conley scored 12 points against a deep drop coverage that Nurkic was running. And so coming into the fourth quarter, Mike didn't score in the third quarter. And Frank Vogel made what I thought was a mistake. He made a coverage adjustment and started running high drop. And instead of just daring Mike Conley to continue to beat them as a scorer, Mike Conley just has too much chemistry with Rudy Gobert as a pick and roll partner. And when you threw the high drop at him, he just immediately picked it apart with pocket passes. Gobert screen. Nurkic is coming out high. Easy pocket pass. KD's way too slow on the tag. Easy dunk for Gobert. Another sloppy turnover from Devin Booker on the other end. Again, this is just fatigue. I'm a big believer that fatigue is having an effect on the Suns and just their overall sloppiness. Fatigue and ball pressure. We're going to get a guard screen from Bradley Beal. Gobert kind of shows there's a closeout opportunity, but look at this pass Booker throws. That's just sloppy. Another pocket pass from Conley here. There's a switch because of help, right? So there's another wedge screen that gets Karl Towns an advantage on Bradley Beal. So Nurkic calls for a switch and he points back out to Gobert. So Beal closes out. But then as Conley runs it, again, instead of Beal kind of meeting Conley here in a more passive way, he closes hard. And when he closes hard, that opens the pocket pass for Gobert. Nurkic has to tag. Cat cuts along the baseline and gets a layup. Same exact thing over here. Again, high drop. Look at how hard Nurkic is showing on these. Easy pocket pass. They're going to run it again here. Look at that. Hard show. Kick to Gobert. Tag by Booker. Now I've got a two-on-one on the weak side with Kevin Durant and Nikhil Alexander-Walker. KD stunts towards the baseline side. Gobert hits him wide open, catch and shoot three for McDaniels. He misses it. But as all the Suns had to rotate over this way, it creates an opening for Mike Conley to get the offensive rebound on the backside. And that basically ended up being the shot that amounted to the dagger. So again, as you can see, and like I had a lot of, I'm actually going to go straight into the mailbag here because this first question kind of plays into this a little bit. So this was a comment that was on the breakout clip that we did from the Suns-Wolves game last night. LOL, this dude is now saying that the game played out exactly as he said, but he literally picked the Suns to win. Don't change up now. So I know the vast majority of you guys are not like this. So I promise that I appreciate and I'm thankful for the most of you guys being able to sift through this and understand. But I always have to clarify this every year when we get to the postseason. I make predictions because it's my job, okay? All of these series are really close. As a matter of fact, with the exception of the Nuggets series and the Celtics series, I think every single... the Nuggets, Celtics, and Pelicans, Thunder. So five of the eight series were in the 100s in terms of how much the favorite is favored. So they were favored by somewhere between minus 105 and minus 195. Every single one of these series. So they're all coin flips, okay? I'm going to make a prediction anyway because that's my job. And in the predictions, what do I always do? I tell you guys, here's what I think is going to happen as a guess. Here's my reasoning for why. However, if the other team wins, here is their pathway. I do that for every single one of these series. That's what I did for the Wolves. I picked the Suns to win because in the regular season, the Suns dominated the Wolves. I had basketball evidence to back that up. In the process, I did say I expected it to go six games because the Wolves are such a good defense and they're so physical, right? But in the process, I broke down the reasons why. Frank Vogel has a really good game plan. His game plan of the aggressive coverages against Ant and the passive coverages against Conley plays the two of them into their worst tendencies, and the Wolves tend to fall apart offensively. That was the evidence that I used to make my prediction, right? But those of you guys who watched the series preview, you saw exactly what I said in the "if the Wolves win, this is what they need to do" segment. I literally said they need Jaden McDaniels to give them scoring pop. What did Jaden McDaniels do in game two? Gave them scoring pop. They need Mike Conley to beat the passive coverages by being aggressive as a scorer. That is what he did in the second quarter run that led to the adjustment that led to him picking them apart in the pocket passes in the fourth quarter. I said Anthony Edwards has to beat Vogel's coverage with pull-up jump shooting in decision-making against their kind of loaded-up coverages. In game one, he beat it with pull-up shooting, and in game two, he beat it with playmaking. And then lastly, I said they cannot let the Suns get into rotation. They need to stay home off the ball as much as possible and try to defend the actions one-on-one and two-on-two. So I laid out the pathway for both teams. By the way, this series is not over. I do believe now that Minnesota will win. Phoenix's process has been so bad in these first two games, I don't think they're even close to figuring this out. And so I do believe Minnesota will win. But I made that prediction before the series based on evidence. Phoenix does still have a chance. If Phoenix goes home and they do take advantage of those smarter reads, and they do get the ball in rotation and start generating higher quality shots, and they up their assist percentage to where it was in the regular season, and then their defensive game plan works better, I do think they can get back in the series. In fact, I do think they'll get at least one in Phoenix, and I think there's a decent chance they get two. I just don't think Phoenix can do it four times in five tries now. So I do believe Minnesota will come back to win. But again, I'm saying this now because I'm going to make four more predictions in the second round and two more in the conference finals and one more in the NBA finals. All of these are mostly coin flips. I picked the Mavs to beat the Clippers. You're insane if you don't think the Clippers can beat the Mavs. Of course they're capable of it. That series is razor thin, right? Like let's take the Pacers-Bucks series. That series is going to be close. The Knicks-Sixers series, I really do think the Sixers are going to go home and win two games and tie that series. All these series are really, really close. So I'm going to make a prediction. If I pick against your team, it doesn't mean I don't like your team. It doesn't mean I don't believe your team can win. I'm going to base my prediction on some basketball evidence, and then I'm also going to lay out the pathway for how the Wolves can win. I wasn't trying to take a victory lap last night on the show. All I was saying is, wow, this is interesting. I thought that if the Wolves won, this is what it would look like, and it's literally what's happening. I find that fascinating from a basketball perspective. Every team goes into matchups in a playoff series with advantages and disadvantages. And the team that best capitalizes on their advantages and hides their disadvantages is going to be the team that wins the series. And so far, through two games, the Minnesota Timberwolves have done a masterful job of playing, of confronting their own weaknesses and playing well in those situations. Jaden scoring, Mike Conley scoring, Anthony Edwards hitting pull-up jumpers and making passing reads. And Phoenix is playing into the worst version of themselves, right? So, like, again, I want to be clear. I know the vast majority of you guys give me that leeway. But for that small segment that seems to think that every prediction I make is me, like, staking my entire reputation as an analyst on the outcome of a series, that's fucking stupid. That's just not how this works. I'm giving you guys predictions because it's my job. I'm going to give my case, but I'm always going to give a case for the other side as well. I'm not rooting against the Timberwolves. I simply just made a call based on evidence in the regular season. And I think we can all agree that in the regular season, the Suns gave the Timberwolves issues. Are we seriously going to pretend that isn't the case? Of course that was the case. They've just managed to flip the script on all of that stuff to have success in this series. Next question. How do you feel about a healthy Lonzo Ball on this Timberwolves team? Love the breakdowns. Keep it up. You know, I actually, again, just looking at it through the lens of a healthy Lonzo Ball, I love the fit. Excellent perimeter defender, more of a playmaking, pace-pushing, kick-ahead, Tyrese Halliburton-esque kind of like read maker in the half court and in transition. And he turned himself into a really good catch-and-shoot player. I don't think you could conceive of a better two-guard to fit your timeline post Mike Conley. I think that makes a ton of sense. The question is, can Lonzo Ball get healthy? And that's where it gets tricky. But I thought that was a really interesting suggestion. And I would love to see Lonzo have a career renaissance in a place like Minnesota. I feel like a major part of the Mavs' fourth quarter success was Russell Westbrook making a ton of bad defensive decisions for no reason. I know very little about the X's and O's of basketball, but sagging off Kyrie and losing Luka or going for a random steal isn't the smartest idea when you're trying to close the gap. So that's always the case with Russ. Russ is the textbook good play, bad play guy. And it's always a scale with him. And sometimes the scale tips towards good plays more than bad. And sometimes it tilts towards bad plays more than good. When he was with the Lakers, more often than not, the bad plays were winning out. With the Clippers, for the most part, the good plays have been winning out. He did make a couple of bad defensive decisions down the stretch of that game. He doubled from Kyrie one pass away when clearly it wasn't schemed for because Kawhi wasn't ready for it as the next rotation. And then he gambled on Luka once and gave in a post-up and gave him a downhill opportunity that led to an easy kickout pass for a PJ Washington three. So, yeah, he did make some mistakes. I just think the good that Russ brought to the table last night outweighed the bad. Don't you think it's interesting how, because of the Wolves' insane perimeter defense on the big three and their ball pressure, a lot of these end-of-possession grenades go to Nurkic on an island against Gobert? How else can you beat lockdown perimeter defense like that at the end of the shot clock? So I'm just going to take this in a different direction. I thought Gobert in general, switching on pick and rolls late in the shot clock, was a huge part of Minnesota's defensive success in games one and two. Essentially, he's meeting them up high and following them into the lane. And yeah, some of those are getting dropped off to Nurkic in late clock situations, but a lot of them, the guard is then pulling Gobert out and then trying to ISO against him. And Gobert is just doing an amazing job on those ISOs. Again, we talk a lot about Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards and Nikhil Alexander-Walker. I even think Mike Conley's done a really good job defensively in the series. But Rudy Gobert is one of the top five defensive anchors in the world, and he pulls it all together for them. Steph has a down month on his stats, and he is no longer top 10 and is no longer in his prime. Recency bias is crazy. So I wanted to clarify this. First of all, Steph's rough end to the season was actually a few months long. I'm doing the exact same thing to Steph that I did with LeBron. LeBron showed a dip in his production and effectiveness last year. And so I moved him way down the playoff. I think I had him eighth or ninth in my player rankings this year. Steph has really struggled as of late, but I still think he's a top 10 player. He just wasn't playing like a top 10 player over the last couple months of the season. He was in the low 20s of points per game and really inefficient by his standards, right? But after this season, yeah, I'm probably going to put Steph in the 5 to 10 range, similar to what I did to LeBron last year. But you're right. Steph absolutely can bounce back. And if Steph did what LeBron did at the end of the year this year, LeBron at the end of the year this year came in hot and like was the only player in the league post-deadline that was averaging at least 27 points per game on at least 50% from the field and 40% from three. He's one of only 5 players in this postseason run so far to average at least 25 points per game on at least 50% from the field and at least 40% from three. He's also averaging 10 assists per game in this postseason run. He's going toe-to-toe with Nikola Jokic at the end of basketball games. Like, LeBron's just playing at an extremely high level right now. So I have moved him back up the list. By the way, I'll save the LeBron piece for the last question because we're going to get to that in a second. But if Steph goes into next season and starts looking like Steph again, of course I'm going to move him back up the list. I'm not burying Steph Curry. I'm just saying strictly within right now, Steph has shown a little bit of a sign of decline and towards the tail end of the season wasn't playing very well. So yeah, I'm going to drop him down the player rankings temporarily, but knowing Steph, knowing how much of a competitor he is, I fully expect that at some point in October, November, December next year, I'm going to be like, holy shit, Steph's a top 5 player again. I thoroughly expect to do that. But you know, in the same way that I dropped Luka, remember when I dropped Luka to 10? I dropped him to 10 because his team didn't even make the playoffs and he didn't play very good defense down the stretch. He did a lot of pouting, a lot of complaining at refs. Wasn't a pretty end of the season for Luka. I look at my player rankings as a constantly sliding scale and I prioritize playoff production. And so, again, like with Steph, definitely not burying him. Fully expect him to make a return near the top of the league. But for right now, he doesn't get to make that claim because a bunch of guys play better than him down the stretch of the season. Lastly, love your content, but you're biased towards LeBron if you think he's the third best player in the NBA right now. I want to be clear. I don't think LeBron is the third best player in a vacuum to start a season with, right? No one's going to take LeBron from early October through June in the top 3. However, we don't have to make it from October to April anymore. We're in April right now, and LeBron is healthy right now, and LeBron is playing at that level right now, and Giannis is hurt right now, and Joel Embiid is hurt right now. And so if I look at the group of players strictly within the lens of this postseason run, Jokic is a clear number 1, Luka is a clear number 2. Tell me who's the third. Who's the guy in this playoff field that is clearly playing better two-way basketball than LeBron James right now? Tell me. I want to hear about it. Maybe we can debate it over the course of the next week through mailbag questions. But like, I'm just saying strictly right now in this postseason because I don't have to worry about 82 games and I don't have to worry. By the way, LeBron had an amazing season, but this was the lower end of the outcome. We all knew coming into the season that it was unlikely that LeBron would just be super healthy throughout the whole thing after how he kind of struggled to stay healthy in the previous few years. We got the small end of that outcome, which is LeBron stays healthy. Here we are. We're in the postseason. LeBron's playing fucking awesome in the first round against Denver. So like, that's kind of where my rationale is. But yeah, when we're ranking players this offseason, I'm not going to have LeBron at number 3 because of the 82 game grind and whether or not he can hold up for his 22nd season that way. All right, guys, that is all I have for today. As always, I sincerely appreciate you guys for supporting the show. We are taking tonight off. I'm going to spend some time with my wife and hang out since I've been putting her through it here the last couple weeks with how busy we've been. But we're going to be back tomorrow night after the final buzzer of Lakers Nuggets. And I will break down tonight's game during the morning show tomorrow. As always, I appreciate you guys and I will see you tomorrow morning.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, That grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.